Eddie, the Collegiate Sophomore. Chapter 4. The Indoor Track Season, Part 2. The Friday before the divisional meet, Mr. Fraser has a short team meeting with the athletes. There is, however, no practice today. Some of the athletes arrive a bit early, including the tribe, who congregate at the far end of the bleachers. As they are waiting, Mitchell asks Johnson, "Do we know anything more about the event assignments?" Johnson explains, "No, not yet. But I think Mr. Fraser is going to reassign some of the relay races. He wasn't too happy about some of Dr. Paxton's decisions." Mitchell replies, "Good. Some of the relay teams made no sense to me." Johnson agrees, telling Mitchell, "Me either. Dr. Paxton's assignments didn't make too much sense to Mr. Fraser, Provost Layton, or Officer Hayes either." The bleachers fill up slowly and, as 8 a.m. approaches, everyone is present. Mr. Fraser, Dr. Bonomo, and Provost Layton walk in, and silence falls over the arena. Many of the team members are wondering what Mr. Fraser is going to say today. Those who have been coached by him over the years already know most of what he will say. Everyone, however, figured out that Mr. Fraser's presentation will be a great departure from that of Dr. Braun. Standing behind a small lectern, Mr. Fraser welcomes the team and tells them good morning. Mr. Fraser then gets down to business. Beginning his address, Mr. Fraser tells the team, "Everyone, please remember to bring a water bottle with you tomorrow, just in case a rumor starts that there is lead in the water." "And what was the other rumor?" Eddie yells out, "Termites in the track." Mr. Fraser laughs and continues, "That's right. That was it. Someone please start that rumor too. And don't any of you fall for anything that you might hear." Going over a few administrative details, Mr. Fraser announces, "Some of you may already know this, but I need to mention it. The track in the Coliseum now utilizes electronic timing devices. The new electronic timers are very similar to the system that is installed in the university's outdoor track. The electronic timers have the ability to measure your speed to 1/100th of a second, but, for this meet, they will only be timing you to the 10ths of a second. This is because the electronic timers are new, and they will be verifying the times against the timekeepers, who will be using stopwatches. Now, here's the problem. There are electronic sensors in the starting blocks that will detect any false start. Do not attempt to anticipate the gun. You will be caught." This is not good news to Eddie, who is the master of anticipating the gun. Getting to what the athletes are waiting to hear, Mr. Fraser then announces, "Some of the event assignments have been revised. The new assignments are based upon your performance over the last few weeks, your handoff abilities, and your mental fitness and ability to compete in a particular event. Provost Layton and I have worked hard over the last few days refining these assignments. Another reason we have changed some of your event assignments is because I want to bring home the bulk of the gold medals." Raising his voice, Mr. Fraser asks, "Is there any reason why we cannot take home the majority of the gold medals?" In unison, many of the team members exclaim, "No." Mr. Fraser smiles and responds, telling the team, "I didn't think so." After a few more announcements, Mr. Fraser begins assigning the events, proclaiming, "First, the men's events. In the 40-yard dash, Eddie, Mark, and Hoffer. In the 220-yard dash, Eddie, Mark, and Hoffer. In the 440-yard dash, Braden, Davida, and Bull. In the 880-yard run, Johnson, Stone, and Mitchell." As Mr. Fraser continues announcing the event assignments, Eddie whispers to Mark, "I wonder what he's going to do with McCrutchen." Mark whispers back, "Nothing. He's benched." Eddie whispers, "Dean Grimsby said he wants McCrutchen in at least two events." Mark reminds Eddie, "Mr. Fraser kicked Dean Grimsby out of the arena. I don't think he cares what Dean Grimsby wants." Eddie replies, "You might be right about that. Eddie and Mark whisper back and forth as they are carefully listening for their name. As they again focus their attention on Mr. Fraser, who is finishing up announcing the men's assignments, Mark and Eddie hear, in the 4x440 relay, Eddie, Mark, Johnson, and Braden. And that 4x440 relay team has never lost a race. In the 4x880 relay, Mitchell, Stone, Akinmola, and Johnson. In the mile medley relay, Eddie, Davida, Braden, and Johnson. Now, for the women's events. Hearing the announcements, Mitchell gives Johnson a high five. Stone and Akinmola are also very glad to hear that Johnson is assigned to the 4x880 relay. As Mr. Fraser continues speaking, Mark points out, he left out McCrutchen. Eddie replies, good. Braden whispers, his as ain't no good anyway. Mark points out, and look at that. McCrutchen just left. I wonder where he's going. Braden tells Mark to take a dump. He's full of shit. Eddie comments, maybe he's throwing in the towel. Mark replies, we can only hope. Mr. Fraser continues announcing the women's events, which reflect a slight departure from those assigned by Dr. Paxton. As Mr. Fraser finishes up announcing the women's events, McCutchen walks back into the arena and takes a seat. Mark tells Braden, McCrutchen's back. You were right. He must have taken a dump. Braden replies, that don't matter none. He's still full of shit. Eddie asks, has that guy ever won anything? Mark replies, not when he was running against us. Johnson adds, and not since he's been here either. Mr. Fraser informs the team, with these assignments, I believe we can take home the bulk of the gold medals. If Provost Layton and I are wrong in our assignments, we will make adjustments as the season progresses. We will make changes as necessary because, in the spring, I want this team to take home all the gold medals. The team cheers and is now fired up to win. Mr. Fraser informs the team, if any of you can think of any improvements that can be made to our assignments, we are always open to your suggestions. Our doors are always open to every one of you. As Mr. Fraser continues with his address, Dean Grimsby, who snuck into the arena a moment ago, announces, I have a few suggestions. As Dean Grimsby approaches the lectern, Mr. Fraser sarcastically exclaims, oh really? And, just what are your suggestions? Dean Grimsby tells Mr. Fraser, the administration would prefer that Todd McCutchen run in at least one, preferably two events in the upcoming divisional meet. Ready for some free entertainment, Mr. Fraser replies, please explain to me why. Dean Grimsby, seeing Provost Layton present in the arena, assumes that she is attending Mr. Fraser's meeting for the same reason he is, which is to ensure that McCutchen participates in the meet. McCutchen was instructed to call Dean Grimsby immediately if he were removed from his event assignments. While Braden thought that McCutchen had stepped out to take a dump, McCutchen actually stepped out into the hallway to call the Dean. Hearing the news that McCutchen has been removed from his events, Dean Grimsby decided to take it upon himself to intervene and attend Mr. Fraser's meeting. Dean Grimsby bluntly tells Mr. Fraser, I would like to defer to Provost Layton regarding this issue, if I may. Provost Layton walks up to the lectern and, in a professional administrative tone, tells Dean Grimsby, thank you, sir, for giving me the floor and bringing this issue to Mr. Fraser's and the team's attention. When an athlete delivers a qualifying time during multiple training sessions and, for whatever reason, is unable to remotely deliver the same competitive performance during an actual competition, they are considered mentally unfit for competition. Mark whispers to Eddie, I think she just said that McCrutchen is retarded. Provost Layton continues, whether it be the stress of the competition itself, stress induced by the competitors, various fears, or any other reason, for that matter, those issues must be addressed and dealt with before the athlete is deemed qualified and fit to compete at any level. Mr. Fraser and I have taken this, and various other factors, into consideration when making the event assignments for the divisional meet this weekend. In order for Mr. Fraser or I to make any further revisions to the event assignments, we will have to be entertained with tangible evidence as to why the change is beneficial to the team as a whole. Obvious to the team, Dr. Layton, speaking as an administrator, has quite an eloquent delivery style compared with how she speaks in her role as a track coach. Dean Grimsby, not knowing what to make of what he is hearing, asks, "Am I hearing correctly that you participated in making these assignments?" Provost Layton informs Dean Grimsby, "Yes, sir. That is correct." Dean Grimsby asks, "And may I ask why?" Provost Layton replies, "I am now the assistant coach of the track team." "I guess you didn't get the memo." The team cheers for Provost Layton, for whom they have a very high regard. As the cheering dies down, Dean Grimsby asks Provost Layton, "When did this come about?" Provost Layton answers, "2 weeks ago." "And, for the record, you weren't on the distribution list to get the memo." "With all due respect, sir, athletics at this university is not within your jurisdiction. While I am standing here in the capacity as assistant coach, I report directly to Mr. Fraser, who reports directly to Dr. Karakova. You, sir, are not in the chain of command. If you have a complaint, please feel free to discuss your issue with Dr. Karakova." There is not much Dean Grimsby can say. Dean Grimsby reports directly to Provost Layton, and which athlete runs in which event is none of his business. And Dr. Karakova will probably tell Dean Grimsby to take a hike or jump in a lake. Knowing Dean Grimsby's presence can lead to nothing constructive, Mr. Fraser exclaims, "Grimsby, get out of my arena. I'm sure there are some overdue library books or students cutting class that need your attention." Laughter emanates from where the tribe is sitting, especially from Eddie, reminiscent of how Mr. Zunday often dealt with Mr. Crumb. Even Provost Layton laughs at Mr. Fraser's remark. Dean Grimsby, a bit unnerved, tells Mr. Fraser, "Please show a little respect, coach. You can't talk to me that way." From the bleachers, a voice is heard, exclaiming, "Oh yes, he can." Dean Grimsby asks, "Who said that?" Eddie stands up and proudly answers, "I did, Junior." Many of the athletes on the bench clap, unnerving the dean even more. Dean Grimsby tells Eddie, "I want to see you in my office right after this meeting." Eddie, playing games with the dean, replies, "Hey, Junior. We had a deal, and you broke it. Do you remember the words, 'If you would like to rejoin the track team, I can assure you that Todd and Steve won't ever be back.' Those were your words. If you can't recall saying that, maybe you can recall that you were supposed to drag my training sled for 440 yards, and you couldn't even drag it 100 yards. That's because your fat ass is out of shape. And now that I'm thinking about it, if I remember correctly, I forgot to kick the shit out of McCrutchen. I think I'll do that right now." Braden exclaims, "McCrutchen was overdue for an ass-kicking anyway." Eddie stands up and walks slowly toward McCrutchen. McCrutchen also stands up and runs out of the arena. Mark exclaims, "Wow. I've never seen McCrutchen run so fast." The tribe laughs at Mark's comment as Eddie returns to his seat. Again, remembering some of Mr. Zunday's tactics, Mr. Fraser tells Dean Grimsby, "Grimsby, you are full of more shit than an overfed elephant. Now, get your pencil pushing ass out of my arena. Otherwise, I'll have my team carry you out." Provost Layton turns away from Dean Grimsby, trying to conceal her laughter. The team, however, sees the provost laughing hysterically. Braden stands up and, in a military tone, asks Mr. Fraser, "Would you like for me to remove him, sir?" Dean Grimsby, knowing that Braden is a campus police officer, decides to leave on his own. The dean clearly knows he will get absolutely nowhere with this group today. Mr. Fraser tells the team, "Now that we've gotten rid of that problem, maybe I can finish. Now, where was I? Oh, yeah. As Provost Layton said very clearly, many of the assignments were based, in part, on your mental fitness to compete. What you have just witnessed in the last 10 minutes demonstrates that a certain person is mentally unfit to compete. Braden comments, yeah. McCrutchen should have stayed around for his own ass-kicking. Mr. Fraser pauses and laughs at Braden's remark, essentially telling the team that it's okay to be yourself. Mr. Fraser continues, when you get out on that track tomorrow, I want you to tell yourself and believe that you are the greatest. And remember this. There is no one, and I repeat, no one in this university better at your event than you are. You are the best. Get out there and perform like it. The team cheers, and Mr. Fraser adjourns today's meeting. After the meeting, when the students have left for class, Provost Layton tells Mr. Fraser, I'm so sorry you had to deal with Dean Grimsby. Well, no. Actually, I'm not. In a way, that was quite funny. Mr. Fraser asks, what is his problem, anyway? Provost Layton replies, genetics. Mr. Fraser asks, what does that guy do around here, anyway? Provost Layton explains, he's the Dean of Students, which means he serves as a liaison between college administrators and student organizations, such as the Student Council, the Panhellenic Council, the campus newspaper, radio station, and so on. I inherited him 7 years ago when I took the position of provost. And you were right earlier. He's a pencil pusher. But he pushes a pencil so I don't have to. Mr. Fraser asks, I'm curious. Why does he think that he can tell us how to assign events? Provost Layton explains, Todd McCrutchen's father. Wow. They got me saying it now. Todd McCrutchen's father donates a lot of money to this university, so he thinks he is entitled to have his son run on the track team. There is no liaison between the Alumni Association and the athletic department, so Dean Grimsby thinks he can assume that role. If he looked at his title, he might just understand that he is the Dean of Students. The word, students, might just give away where his jurisdictional responsibility is. He is not the Dean of Alumni. Mr. Fraser mentions, maybe, now he'll stay out of the way. Provost Layton assures Mr. Fraser, he won't. But you apparently have no problem taking care of him. As they are walking out of the arena, Provost Layton tells Mr. Fraser, you know, I'm going to require that Dean Grimsby attend the meet tomorrow. Then, just to irritate him, I'll ask him for his synopsis of the events on Monday. Mr. Fraser replies, the only thing he'll see is who isn't running. Provost Layton replies, you're probably right about that. Mr. Fraser tells Provost Layton, I'll guess I'll see you tomorrow morning at the Coliseum. Oh, and get a good night's sleep. By the end of the meet, you'll be exhausted. Mr. Fraser heads to his office, and Provost Layton heads to hers. Neither of them can wait for tomorrow. Early on Saturday morning, the track team heads over to the Coliseum. For those without a vehicle, a bus has been provided to transport them. Since it is very cold outside, Eddie and Kathy take the Porsche 914. Mark and Paula take Mark's Jeep, leaving their dune buggy at home. Bobby B. and Braden, however, drive their dune buggies, mostly because they have no other choice. Tessa also drives her dune buggy today, which is much better than sitting on the back of Hoffa's motorcycle. Today, because of the cold weather, Hoffa is even hitching a ride in Tessa's dune buggy. They could have taken the bus, but after the meet, they will all likely land at the pizzeria, and the bus isn't going there. The tribe hangs around with the team, sitting on the bench, waiting for the meet to begin. Seeing McCutchen walk up, Kathy whispers to Eddie, I didn't think he'd even bother to show up. Paula comments, he's up to something. Everyone better watch out. Kathy asks Paula, superpowers? Paula replies, oh, shit. I think so. Paula tells the entire tribe to watch McCutchen like a hawk. Mark tells Eddie, let's go spread some rumors. Mark and Eddie, recruiting Johnson, Braden, and Hoffa, walk around the venue and head to the water fountain. Mark hangs around, talking with Eddie. After a few minutes, a member of another team, wearing number 832, takes a drink of water. Mark asks number 832, "You haven't heard?" Number 832 replies, "Heard what?" Mark tells him, "The water has lead in it. You shouldn't drink it. Lead causes brain damage. You might want to tell your teammates." The guy walks away, and Mark tells the group that takes care of team number 8. Johnson, Braden, and Hoffa walk off to man another water fountain as Eddie heads off to test the track. At the curve in the track, Eddie bounces up and down a few times, testing the structural integrity of the track. Catching the attention of two runners, Eddie is asked, "What are you doing?" Eddie replies, "One of the maintenance guys told me that the structure under the track has termites. A couple places feel a little weak. He's afraid the track might collapse." One of the runners tests the track himself and tells Eddie, "I see what you mean." Seizing the moment, Eddie tells him, "You might want to spread the word." As he is asked a few more times, Eddie recruits a few more athletes to spread the rumor. As he is walking back to his bench, Eddie is intercepted by the recruiter, who wanted to give Eddie a full scholarship 2 years ago. The recruiter asks Eddie, "Hey, do you remember me?" Eddie replies, "No." The recruiter tells Eddie, "I met you at an invitational meet 2 years ago. I tried to get you to sign up with our university." Eddie replies, "I still don't remember you." The recruiter reminds Eddie, "You told me that you wanted to be a mechanic." Eddie replies, "And I am a mechanic. Do you need your car fixed?" The recruiter doesn't know what to make of Eddie. Wondering what's up with Eddie, the recruiter asks, "So, you're running for another university now?" Eddie replies, "Yeah. You guys weren't in the running. Your university didn't pay enough." While the recruiter wants to ask more questions, Eddie tells him, "I got to run. My event, the 40-yard dash, is up first. Come and watch me win." The recruiter walks away, wondering what kind of deal Eddie struck with his university. Returning to the bench with his cohorts, Mark tells Mr. Fraser, "Don't drink the water. It has lead in it." Mr. Fraser laughs and asks, "You guys really did that?" Mark replies, "Yeah. Me, Eddie, Braden, Johnson, and Hoffa. And Eddie found termites in the track." Mr. Fraser tells the group, "Good job." Mr. Fraser tells Mark, Eddie, and Hoffa, "You guys are up in about 15 minutes. You'd better warm up and get ready." The meet begins with the men's 40-yard dash. The call is made and, since the heats move along quickly, all of the contestants in this event head to the starting line. Eddie, Mark, and Hoffa walk to the starting line together, with Mark discussing how he will mess with Major Nackler Brocklin. The start aligns the contestants up according to their heat number, with Eddie, Mark, and Hoffa all in the first heat. Along with them in the first heat is Major Nackler Brocklin, who is starting to get nervous just seeing Mark. Eddie's heat is called, and he steps up to the blocks along with Mark and Hoffa. Pointing to Nackler Brocklin, Mark tells Hoffa, "That's Colonel Nackler Brocklin. Watch out for him." Overhearing Mark's comment to Hoffa, Nackler Brocklin exclaims, "My name is Major Nackler Brocklin. Get it right. It's Major Nackler Brocklin." Mark replies, "Yeah, that's it. Captain Nackler Brocklin. Got it. I'm sorry. I forgot." Nackler Brocklin exclaims, "I said my name is Major. It's Major. Major Nackler Brocklin." Eddie whispers to Mark, he's a little cranky already. Mark replies, "I guess he didn't take his medication." Eddie laughs, as Nackler Brocklin knows they are laughing about him. The starter announces, "On your marks," then announces, "Set." The buzzer sounds, and the runners are off. Eddie, taking an early lead, can tell Mark is right behind him. In third place is Nakla Brocklin, with Hoffa right behind. At the finish line, Eddie crosses first, winning this heat. He is followed by Mark, Nakla Brocklin, then Hoffa. The runners in fifth and sixth place deliver a reasonably good performance. The runners in seventh and eighth place, however, will not likely make the final. After the race, Eddie, Mark, and Hoffa head back to the team bench, knowing that they are in the final. After the men are finished with their preliminary heats, the women are up in the 40-yard dash. Kathy and Paula are in the first heat today. Erica joins them this year, but is in a later heat. Kathy has won this event for the last 3 years. This year, Kathy and Paula have no real competition in this race. As Kathy and Paula are headed to the starting line, Mark tells Eddie, "I really got to think of a way to mess with Nakla Brocklin. It looks like he's going to beat Hoffa." Eddie replies, "Just tick him off. He seems to be a ticking time bomb." Mark replies, "Good point. I am going to do that. I'll have to think about how to do this." The starter announces, "On your marks," and the women get into the blocks. The starter announces, "Set," and the runners get in the set position. The buzzer sounds, and Kathy and Paula both let out their primal scream as they leave the blocks. Kathy's primal scream startles one of the opponents, causing her to lose a few precious tenths of a second. At the finish line, with a repeat performance of the last few years, Kathy crosses the finish line first, with Paula finishing second, right behind her. As they head back to the bench, both know they have made the final. Nearing the bench, Kathy and Paula hear another primal scream as another heat begins, which was not Erika's. Paula mentions to Kathy, "It sounds like the Amazon war cry is catching on." After a few more events, the call is made for the men's 440-yard dash. Up for the university are Braden, Davida, and Boole. Braden is expected to win, but Davida and Boole are not to be underestimated. They have been training harder than ever. This is the event that Braden has been waiting for. Braden, in the first heat, is the clear favorite in this event. Braden walks up to the blocks and, by now, everyone at the starting line knows who he is. Braden exclaims, "Good luck to everyone. Have fun fighting it out for second place." Braden then starts dancing, exclaiming, "I'm gonna kick your ass," and land it in the grass. "This race is all mine, cause I got the fastest time. 440 yards, and you're going down hard." Getting behind the blocks, Braden then exclaims, "Okay. Let's get this as kicking over with." Boole does not know what to make of Braden, for he's never seen anything like Braden's activities at the starting line before. The starter announces, "On your marks," as Braden spins on one foot, jumps over the blocks, and drops right in, ready to go. Braden gives the distinct impression that he has practiced this move many times before. The starter announces, "Set," and the buzzer sounds shortly after. Braden takes off, and is out of the blocks faster now that he is using his new block settings. All eyes are on Braden, who has the potential to break some sort of record whenever he is on the track. Braden is clearly dominating this race, and everyone in the arena is very aware of it. At the halfway mark, the second place runner is 4 seconds behind Braden. Coming around the final turn, Braden has no competition in sight. Crossing the finish line with a time of 45.2 seconds, Braden wins his heat, and setting yet another personal indoor record. The crowd cheers, knowing that they have just witnessed a world-class performance. As Braden returns to his bench, Braden is greeted with high fives, fist bumps, and a special congratulation from Mr. Fraser, who informs Braden that he just set a divisional record. Letting everyone know, Braden exclaims, "Ain't no one faster than me. I'm still the chief ass kicker." Pointing to McCutcheon, Braden exclaims, "And your scrawny little ass was kicked." Braden receives more high fives and fist bumps from the tribe and some of the other team members. The focus now shifts to the 4x880 relay, an event that was surrounded by controversy at the end of the autumn semester. Mitchell, Stone, Akinmola, and Johnson head to the starting line. McCutcheon, who was supposed to run in this event, is sitting on the bench. And Dr. Paxton, who was supposed to be coaching the distance team, is sitting on 7 Mile Beach in the Cayman Islands. Provost Layton is very interested in the outcome of this race. She has chosen the members for this relay team and the order in which they are running today. Mitchell is on the track, awaiting the signal. The starter announces, set, and Mitchell is focused on not only winning, but to deliver a time worthy of recognition. The four relay team members have realized that they, like the 4x440 relay team, have the potential to dominate their event this year. The buzzer sounds, and Mitchell is out to win. After two laps, used to seeing high school performance levels, Mr. Fraser exclaims, his clocking. What did you clock him at? Wendy replies, his 440-yard split was 55 seconds. Mitchell has left the rest of the field in the dust. During his last quarter mile, Mitchell maintains his pace, as Mr. Fraser and Provost Layton watch carefully. Approaching the transition zone, Mitchell picks up his pace and flawlessly delivers the baton to Stone. Provost Layton has her own stopwatch running, timing Darrell's leg. Widening the lead, Stone shows no signs of weakness. Neither does the track, but some runners still think the track has termites. Mr. Fraser exclaims, his clocking too. Where did these guys come from? Checking the 440-yard split time, Provost Layton exclaims, this could be Darrell's best half mile yet. Ready to receive the goods, Akinmola gets on the track. Stone delivers the baton, and Akinmola is off to show everyone that he is not the weak link. Provost Layton steps away from the team bench for a moment. Wiping a tear of happiness from her eye, the assistant coach can immediately see the results of Mr. Fraser's training protocols. Her son Darrell's time of 1 minute, 47.6 seconds represents his best half-mile run of his life. Provost Layton has heard from both Mitchell and Eddie that top end, and not endurance, is the issue. When Braden beat all of the milers in their own race, Provost Layton strongly suspected that the runner's top speed is the real issue. Today, she can clearly see that Eddie, Kathy, and Mitchell were all correct. Not surprisingly, that information originally came from Mr. Fraser. Again focusing her attention on the race that she, herself, put together, Provost Layton watches as Akinmola delivers the baton to Johnson. No one in the arena is faster than Johnson in the half mile. And in a relay race, Johnson gets a running start. After speaking with Mrs. Owens, Mr. Fraser exclaims, these guys might just break the divisional record. Giving Mr. Fraser a bit of encouragement, Braden exclaims, no. They are gonna break it. Johnson's got the baton. All eyes are on Johnson, who crosses the finish line, delivering a composite time of 7 minutes, 15.8 seconds, setting a new divisional record. When they return to the bench, everyone gives the 4x880 relay team a generous supply of high fives and offer their congratulations. Stone can immediately tell the difference in his performance after training with Mitchell for a few months. Akinmola, as Mr. Fraser said, didn't think he can run this fast. With Mitchell and Johnson at their all-time best, it is not surprising that the 4x880 relay delivered such an outstanding performance. The call is made for the 40-yard dash final. Eddie is the top seed, and Mark is number two. Unfortunately, Hoffer, who ran his best in the preliminaries, is the fourth seed. In the final, Eddie, Mark, and Hoffer are up against Major Nacho Brocklin yet again, who had the third best qualifying time of the day. Mark has been doing his best to gain a psychological advantage in this race. Mark's goal is to distract Nacho Brocklin so that Hoffer can place in this race. Walking up to the blocks, Mark casually comments to Eddie, well, it looks like we're up against minor Nacho Brocklin again. Nacho Brocklin, overhearing Mark, immediately becomes unhinged and exclaims, "That's Major Nacla Brocklin. That's my name. Major Nacla Brocklin. And don't you ever forget it." Mark replies, "I'm sorry about that. I was wrong. I got it right now. Your name is Major Nacla Crocklin, not Minor Nacla Brocklin. I'll remember that from now on." Nacla Brocklin exclaims, "What did you just call me?" Mark ignores Nacla Brocklin, as Nacla Brocklin becomes even more unhinged. Eddie laughs, as Mark clearly takes the gold medal in messing with heads today. Nacla Brocklin approaches Mark and pushes him, exclaiming, "What did you call me?" Mark grins and steps back as Nacla Brocklin begins chasing Mark. Mark runs in circles, evading Nacla Brocklin's every move. One of the officials tells Nacla Brocklin, "Hey, you. Calm down." Nacla Brocklin ignores the official and continues to yell at and chase down Mark. A few more officials come over and try to restore the peace, but to no avail. With five officials now around, Nacla Brocklin has no choice but to calm down to some degree. The head timekeeper asks Mark, since he seems to be quite calm in comparison to Nacla Brocklin, "Okay, please tell me what's going on here." Mark replies, "I couldn't remember his name, and I guess I got it wrong when I was talking to Eddie. I wasn't even talking to that guy. Then, he started yelling at me and chasing me. His name is hard to pronounce. Just ask him." The head timekeeper, raising his voice, asks Nacla Brocklin, "Why were you chasing him?" Nacla Brocklin, who has become very unhinged, replies, exclaiming, "He's messing up my name. He was messing it all up." The head timekeeper asks, "Okay, so what's your name?" Nacla Brocklin exclaims, "My name is Major Nacla Brocklin. And he messed it all up. He's messing up my name." Even the head timekeeper can see that Nacla Brocklin's name is quite unusual and perhaps difficult to pronounce. The head timekeeper dares not attempt to pronounce Nacla Brocklin's name himself in fear of messing up the pronunciation. The head timekeeper tells Nacla Brocklin, "Just calm down and focus on the race. That's why you're here." Nacla Brocklin tries to calm down as he stands behind the blocks. The head timekeeper remains close to the starting line, observing the competitors closely, making sure everyone remains calm. As the competitors get back into position behind the blocks, Nacla Brocklin keeps turning his head, looking at Mark, which is clearly noticed by the officials. Mark, however, completely ignores Nacla Brocklin. After the officials get back to their positions, the starter announces, "On your marks." As the runners get into the blocks, Nacla Brocklin repeatedly looks over at Mark. Mark catches Nacla Brocklin out of the corner of his eye as he is getting into position. Evading any notion of wrongdoing by the officials, Mark whispers, "Minor," and laughs under his breath. Nacla Brocklin steps out of his lane and pushes Mark, who embellishes a bit, and Pratt falls into Eddie's lane. Seeing what Mark is up to, Eddie also falls over. The head timekeeper runs over to break up the instigation started by Nacla Brocklin. Mark, pretending to have trouble standing up, tells the head timekeeper, "I've had enough of that guy, whatever his name is. If you guys can't keep him under control, the next time he touches me, I'm going to have to take him out myself." The head timekeeper clearly sees Mark's point. From the head timekeeper's perspective, Mark was getting positioned in the blocks, Nacla Brocklin was staring at him, and suddenly became aggressive. And the head timekeeper can clearly see that Mark could easily take out Nacla Brocklin with no problem at all. Seeing what is happening from the bench, Mr. Fraser runs over to the starting line. Attending to Mark, Mr. Fraser asks, "What's going on here?" Mark and Mr. Fraser walk aside as Mark explains, "I was talking to Eddie and I mispronounced that guy's name and he lost it." Mr. Fraser asks, "What's his name?" Mark replies, "Major Nacla Brocklin." Mr. Fraser asks, "What did you call him?" Mark replies, "Minor Nackler Brocklin." Mr. Fraser, knowing exactly what Mark is up to, laughs, and tells Mark, "That was a good one." Mark explains, "But I corrected myself, and I called him Major Nackler Brocklin." Then, he kind of got mad. Mr. Fraser tells Mark, "I can see he's a little more than just upset. He must have some other problem." Mark replies, "Yeah. I'd say. Me and Eddie keep beating him, and he's about to lose his scholarship. That's his problem." The head timekeeper comes over to Mr. Fraser and Mark and tells them, "I'm going to have Major Nackler Brocklin, or whatever his name is, removed from this event. But either way, he left his lane once I started the command sequence. So, he's technically disqualified." Mr. Fraser replies, "Thank you. I really wasn't expecting this today. I can't believe you guys actually have to deal with this kind of crap." The head timekeeper agrees, telling Mr. Fraser, "You and me both." In the presence of the head timekeeper, Mr. Fraser asks Mark, "Are you okay to run?" Mark replies, "Yeah, now that what's his name is gone." Pointing to Nackler Brocklin, Mark exclaims, "Look at him. Now he's attacking that other guy." Nackler Brocklin has really gone off the deep end and is physically attacking another competitor, who was laughing over the situation at the starting blocks. The head timekeeper calls security over, and Nackler Brocklin, who is now totally out of control, is escorted to the security office. On the way out, Nackler Brocklin fights with the security officers, continually yelling, "That guy messed up my name. And that other guy was laughing at me. They are all messing up my race." Mark comments to the head timekeeper, "Well, this race didn't start off exactly as planned." The head timekeeper replies, "There is something seriously wrong with that guy. I've been doing this for 15 years, and never have I seen anything like this." Mark and Eddie are reasonably assured that they will not have to contend with Nackler Brocklin in a relay race later, not that it would matter. And Hoffer has been just assured of third place in the 40-yard dash, which was Mark's ultimate goal. With one empty lane, the starter announces, "On your marks." The starter announces, "Set." The buzzer sounds, and the runners are off. Eddie and Mark take a slight lead right out of the blocks. After 10 yards, Eddie and Mark break away. Hoffer is in third place, with a runner chasing him down. At the finish line, Eddie crosses first, taking the gold medal. Mark, taking second place, finishes right behind Eddie. Hoffer takes third place, sweeping the event for the university. And Nackler Brocklin will hear about the race when he returns to practice next week, unless he's been admitted to a sanitarium somewhere. Once the men's 40-yard dash final is over, the call is made for the women's 40-yard dash final. Kathy and Paula have the best qualifying times and, again, have no real competition in this event. With 8 finalists, 6 women will be battling it out for third place. Hoping to take third place is Erika, who marginally beat out Tessa in this event all season. Tessa, however, will be running in the 220-yard dash along with Kathy and Paula a little later. The starter announces, "On your marks," followed by, "Set." The buzzer sounds, and Kathy's and Paula's primal scream echoes through the arena, announcing to everyone who is back for another season. Kathy and Paula quickly procure the lead, but another runner is chasing down Erika. At the finish line, in a repeat performance of last year, Kathy takes first place, and Paula takes second place. Finishing in third place is Erika, who came out of nowhere this year. Kathy, Paula, and Erika have a group hug and head toward the bench. On the way to the bench, another contestant asks Erika, "Who are you? Where did you come from?" Answering for Erika, Paula tells the girl wearing number 734, "We borrowed her from another university." Knowing that Paula is up to something, Kathy tells Paula, "We were told not to say anything about that." Number 734 angrily tells Paula, "I have half a mind to report your team. Paula replies, "Well, a half a mind. How did you get into college with only a half of a mind?" Number 734 gives Paula a dirty look, screams in frustration, and heads in the other direction. Kathy asks, "What was that all about?" Paula explains that girl, who's wearing number 734, was one of the babies from last year who was throwing a shit fit that someone was in her lane. Kathy exclaims, "That's right." Paula explains, "It can only throw her off later if we're up against her again. And, yes, I've been learning from Mark." The women have a good laugh, wondering what kind of train they just wrecked. With the 40-yard dash finals now over, it's on to the men's one-mile run. On the track, in the first heat, are Stone, Mitchell, and Akinmola. This year, any of the three distant stars can win this race. Based upon past statistics, Mitchell is today's favorite. But the statistics are from last year. Everyone has been training hard, and Mitchell knows this will be the hardest race of his life. Akinmola now knows how fast he can run, and Stone knows that he is at his best ever. The buzzer sounds, and the one-mile run begins. As expected, Stone sprints the first few yards to secure the leading position. After the first lap, Mitchell attempts to drop in closely behind Stone, but Akinmola will not allow it. Instead, Mitchell drops in behind Akinmola. Stone knows exactly what Mitchell and Akinmola are up to, but, this year, he doesn't care. During the second quarter mile, the field spreads out, which is expected. Akinmola, in second place, and Mitchell, in third place, have not yet made a move. Also, as expected, during the third quarter mile, Mitchell passes Akinmola and tries to pass Stone. Akinmola, knowing exactly what Mitchell is up to, drops in behind Mitchell, hoping that Mitchell will make a move and pass Stone. Stone, however, makes Mitchell work hard, not letting him pass. The final quarter mile is the proverbial fight to the finish. Stone is currently winning this race and having the best performance of his life. With 220 yards left to go, finding a third wind, Stone slightly widens his lead. Mitchell and Akinmola respond and give it all they have in a sprint to the finish. With 50 yards to go, Mitchell and Akinmola are gaining on Stone. As the finish draws near, Mitchell does not have enough distance left in the race to pass Stone. The crowd cheers as Stone takes first place. This time, Mitchell takes second place, and Akinmola takes third place. The runner in fourth place crosses the finish line 20 seconds later. Stone, Mitchell, and Akinmola return to the bench, receiving high fives and congratulations from the coaches and their fellow team members. Provost Layton takes the liberty to announce the times, which are posted on the electronic scoreboard: Stone, 3:54.2. Mitchell, 3:55.0. And Akinmola, 3:55.2. Great job, guys. Awesome. Today, Stone, Mitchell, and Akinmola all ran the best race of their lives. No one, however, is happier than Provost Layton. Walking over to Kathy, Provost Layton tells her, "I just want to thank you so much for all you've done for this team." Kathy asks, "How do you mean?" Provost Layton explains, "You went through great lengths to help get Eddie back on the team last year. If you gave up, none of us would be standing here right now. And just look at how the meet is going so far." Kathy is quite aware that the university's team is winning nearly everything. Provost Layton and Kathy continue to talk as the call is made for the men's mile medley relay. Eddie, Davida, Braden, and Johnson head over to the starting line. Provost Layton continues and tells Kathy, "I wonder what would have happened if Dean Grimsby wouldn't drag the training sled last year." Kathy confidently replies, "First, Eddie wouldn't have come back, and McCrutchen would have been running in the 4x880 relay today. They would have lost. And Mr. Fraser wouldn't have taken the job as the coach. And I'd be eating pizza with Eddie, Mark, and Paula at the pizzeria right now. Oh, and Dr. Paxton would still be fixing the races. Provost Layton is amazed at Kathy's wisdom, knowledge, and ability to understand the future consequences of a minor change in events. Kathy then mentions, Eddie really doesn't like Dean Grimsby. Provost Layton replies, believe me. I can see that. Eddie was quite disrespectful to Dean Grimsby yesterday during the team meeting, and, for the record, I enjoyed every minute of it. It's not everybody who calls the Dean Junior. Kathy informs Provost Layton, trust me, Eddie was just getting warmed up. You haven't seen Eddie get mad yet. Provost Layton laughs, telling Kathy, I hope I'm there for the main performance. Provost Layton pretty much just informed Kathy that Eddie is off limits when it comes to Dean Grimsby's manipulative tactics and tirades. Focusing their attention back to the track, Kathy mentions, it looks like the guys are about to win the mile medley relay. Kathy and Provost Layton watch as Johnson approaches the finish line with the closest competitor 100 yards behind him. Provost Layton tells Kathy, okay, I feel a lot better now. Kathy asks, about what? Provost Layton explains, I suggested to Mr. Fraser that we put Davida in the mile medley relay and use Mark in the 4x220 relay. Now, I know this is going to work out. Kathy tells Provost Layton, Mark is pretty much the best guy on the team at the 220-yard races anyway. Provost Layton tells Kathy, speaking of which, your mile medley team is up in a few minutes. You'd better warm up. Kathy goes to warm up as Provost Layton walks over to Mr. Fraser, who is talking with a meet official. Seeing Mr. Fraser in a discussion with the assistant meet clerk, Provost Layton walks over and asks, is there a problem? Mr. Fraser explains, a report was made that Erika was borrowed from another university. Provost Layton tells the assistant meet clerk, that's nonsense. The assistant meet clerk asks, and who are you? Provost Layton replies, I'm Dr. Athena Layton, the provost of the university, and the assistant track coach. I can assure you that Erika Gabriel attends our university, and that she has passing grades in all her courses. Please present to me your evidence to the contrary, and I'll entertain it. I'm sure you're aware of the official channels to properly investigate a complaint of this nature. Until then, you do not have a complaint. At a loss of what to do next, the assistant meet clerk tells Provost Layton, one of the competitors said. Before the assistant meet clerk can finish, Provost Layton interrupts and tells him, one of the competitors said. I see. I can't wait to hear where this one is going. Realizing that he has no evidence at all, the assistant meet clerk tells the two coaches, well, a report was made, and I had to check it out. Provost Layton informs the assistant meet clerk, if you have a concern regarding Erika Gabriel's eligibility to compete, please contact me, and the university will be glad to provide you with her official enrollment status. The assistant meet clerk replies, I'll see what they want to do, which will likely be nothing. Rumors do not constitute evidence. The assistant meet clerk walks away, hoping not to have to address this issue again. Provost Layton asks Mr. Fraser, what was that all about? Mr. Fraser replies, hold on a second. Mr. Fraser calls Erika over and asks her, do you know anything about you supposedly being borrowed from another university? Erika replies, yeah. Paula told one of the losers in the 40-yard dash that after the final. Mr. Fraser laughs and tells Provost Layton, I can't wait to hear this one. Mr. Fraser calls Paula over, who saw Mr. Fraser speaking with a meet official a moment ago. Seeing Mr. Fraser and Provost Layton standing with Erika, Paula thinks she might be in some sort of trouble. Paula asks, what's up? Mr. Fraser asks, what's all this about Erika being borrowed from another university? Paula replies, oops. Well, this girl, number 734, is a real bitch. So, she asked Erika, "Who are you, and where did you come from?" She was really angry, so I told her we borrowed her from another university. I figured I'd mess with her head a little, being that we might be up against her a little later. Mr. Fraser gives Paula a high five, telling her, "That was a good one." Hearing the call for the Women's Mile Medley Relay, Mr. Fraser tells Paula and Erika, "There's your call. Good luck." As the Mile Medley Relay team heads to the starting line, Provost Layton tells Mr. Fraser, "Actually, that was kind of entertaining." Mr. Fraser tells Provost Layton, "You'd better get used to it. You wouldn't believe some of the stuff these guys make up." Provost Layton observes, "They really seem to enjoy it." As they are watching the final leg of the final heat of the Men's Mile Medley Relay, Provost Layton asks Mr. Fraser, "Tell me one of the better things they've come up with." Mr. Fraser explains, "One of Paula's best ones was during a meet with Centerville High School. That's McCrutchen's High School, by the way. They pulled the same stunt later in the season with Riverdale. Mark and Paula started a rumor that the track was infested with ticks. Both times, the other team was checking their legs for ticks during the whole meet." Provost Layton laughs and tells George, "I recall Eddie telling me about that once. That was hilarious." Mr. Fraser replies, "But wait. Right before a race, Paula told the Riverdale runners that a guy from another team had ticks on his balls and that they could have crawled up his butt." Laughing hysterically, Provost Layton exclaims, "In all my life, George, I never thought track and field could be this entertaining." Mr. Fraser replies, "Me either. Trust me. You ain't seen nothing yet." Provost Layton asks Mr. Fraser, "Okay, so now I have to ask. What's the story behind McCutchen?" Mr. Fraser explains, "You came in at the tail end of that one. The rivalry between Mark and McCutchen goes back to when they were in the 7th grade. Mark and Eddie beat him in every competition. Over the years, Mark has messed with no one more than McCutchen. I really should cut McCutchen from the team because he's not competitive enough. But he provides way too much entertainment value to the guys. I shouldn't really say this, but it will be interesting to watch where this goes next." Provost Layton mentions, "When we were going over the performance statistics to redo Dr. Paxton's assignments, I noticed McCutchen's times were extremely erratic and all over the chart." Mr. Fraser replies, "I've noticed that too. Right now, we really can't risk putting him on the track." Mr. Fraser and Provost Layton watch as the buzzer sounds and Kathy begins the team's heat in the Women's Mile Medley Relay. Today, the sound of the buzzer is nothing compared to Kathy's primal scream. Mr. Fraser tells Provost Layton, "Watch these girls. They are amazing." Mr. Fraser and Provost Layton watch as the women are in search of gold. The university's Women's Mile Medley Relay team is the top seed. But with Amber replacing Barbara this year, they all may just have to work a little harder to retain that position. As Kathy hands off to Paula, Provost Layton tells Mr. Fraser, "I really wish I were on that track right now." Knowing that running with this team would be awesome, Mr. Fraser replies, "I know. This is the best group of runners I've ever seen in my life." Watching as Paula hands off to Erika, Mr. Fraser tells Provost Layton, "Watch this. Paula's going to hand off to the girl we borrowed from another university." Provost Layton laughs and replies, "It sounds like you're having fun with this too." Mr. Fraser explains, "That stunt that Paula pulled earlier is one of the reasons these guys are so good. They are all having fun out there." Erika hands off to Amber, which goes smoothly, and now all eyes are on the track. This is Amber's first 880-yard run in collegiate competition. Inheriting a significant lead, Amber knows she cannot let her guard down. Mitchell walks over to reassure Mr. Fraser and Provost Layton, "Don't worry. Amber is going to win." Provost Layton asks, How do you know? Mitchell replies, Amber has a 12-second lead. Provost Layton then asks, explain your logic, please. Mitchell explains, on average, Amber can run this in 2:24 and Barbara in 2:13. If no one has ever caught Barbara with a 12-second lead, they'd have a really hard time catching Amber. The girl in second place is gaining on Amber, which is obvious to everyone watching. Mr. Fraser is getting concerned, but Mitchell remains calm. With 1/4 of a mile left to go, Amber's lead is now only 6 seconds. But Amber is a freshman and is up against a senior. With 220 yards remaining and a 4-second lead, Amber sprints to the finish. Amber crosses first, a mere 2 seconds ahead of the team taking second place in this heat. But, with a few more heats to be run, everyone will have to wait to see which team takes the gold medal. Mitchell cheers, confident that Amber and the Mile Medley Relay team will place in this event. Provost Layton tells Mitchell, I'm quite impressed that you knew that. Mitchell replies, I had an advantage. I've run with Amber for 7 years. I know what she can do. Provost Layton asks Mitchell, what would happen, say, if they were tied halfway through their leg? Mitchell explains, Amber would draft off her, and when there is about 50 to 100 yards left, she would give it all she has and sprint to the finish. But, based upon the girl who took second place, if they were tied at 440 yards, Amber probably would not have won this one. Provost Layton quickly realizes that some members of the university's track team know each other very well. After a few more events, the call for the 220-yard dash is made. Eddie, Mark, and Hoffa head to the starting line. On the way, Mark tells Eddie and Hoffa, Oh wonderful! Look who's back! Eddie and Hoffa, looking at the starting line, sees Major Nackler Brocklin once again. Apparently, Nackler Brocklin was only removed from the 40-yard dash and not the meet. Mark asks Eddie, how much time do we have? Eddie replies, at least 5 minutes, maybe a little more. Mark looks around, seeing that several officials have their eyes on Nackler Brocklin. That will make it quite difficult for Mark to antagonize Nackler Brocklin before the race. When they arrive at the starting line, Mark tells Eddie, watch this. Mark, in lane 4, stands in his lane and gives Nackler Brocklin a cold, hard stare. Nackler Brocklin looks at Mark, then looks away. Mark continues staring at Nackler Brocklin out of the corner of his eye, who catches Mark again looking his way. Nackler Brocklin is getting very nervous and paces from lane to lane. Mark continues to stare at his competitor out of the corner of his eye, tracking Nackler Brocklin's every move. Mark is quite aware that, in this situation, the first person to say anything or react will be the loser of the mind games. Nackler Brocklin takes the bait and, looking at Mark, exclaims, What are you looking at? Mark remains silent as Nackler Brocklin begins to become even more irate. Nackler Brocklin gets in front of Mark and again exclaims, What's your problem? Mark tells Eddie, I think we have a minor problem here, emphasizing the word minor. Eddie looks at Nackler Brocklin and tells Mark, A minor problem. I can see that. Nackler Brocklin exclaims, Are you making fun of me? Mark tells Eddie, It's turning into a major problem, emphasizing the word major, but says nothing to Nackler Brocklin. Lunging at Mark, Nackler Brocklin attempts to take Mark down. Mark, however, was expecting Nackler Brocklin to attack and quickly moves away as Nackler Brocklin trips and face plants onto the ground. Mark quickly steps back as Nackler Brocklin again has now attracted the attention of the officials. In a heated rage, Nackler Brocklin again runs toward Mark, who runs in circles evading him. A lane judge tells Nackler Brocklin, Hey you. Calm down. Mark tells the lane judge, Hey. Get this guy out of here. Nackler Brocklin, however, continues to pursue Mark. Several officials tell Nakla Brocklin to calm down, but Nakla Brocklin is too focused on pursuing Mark to hear what they are saying. Mark stops, standing next to Eddie and Hoffa. Seeing nearly a dozen officials now involved, Eddie tells Nakla Brocklin, "If you touch him, I will level you, and you can be sure that you'll never run again." Hoffa advises Nakla Brocklin, "You'd better take him seriously. At 6 feet, 5 inches tall, and 260 pounds, it's obvious to everyone around that Eddie can make good on his promise. So could Mark or Hoffa for that matter." The officials take advantage of the situation and surround Nakla Brocklin. Nakla Brocklin exclaims, "He was looking at me. He was staring me down." Mark tells the officials, "Yeah, I was looking at him. And everyone else too. I wanted to see who I was up against. Jeesh." Nakla Brocklin exclaims, "He was looking at me and messing up my name." Acting disgusted, Mark comments, "Not this shit again. Just ship his crazy ass off to the loony bin in a bus." Nakla Brocklin yells out, "There ain't nothing wrong with me. You've been messing up my name." In a heated rage, Nakla Brocklin attempts to attack Mark again, but there are too many officials between him and Mark. The officials block Nakla Brocklin, realizing they have a major problem on their hands. Mr. Fraser arrives at the scene, exclaiming, "What is going on here?" The head timekeeper pulls Mr. Fraser aside, telling him, "One of the contestants, this Major Nakla Brocklin guy that we had a problem with earlier today, started chasing after your runner again. I had my eye on that guy since he walked up." Even the meet official failed to pronounce Nakla Brocklin's name correctly. Mr. Fraser asks, "What happened this time?" The head timekeeper explains, "He lost it again. I was half expecting something to happen with that guy today. I can assure you that your guys had nothing to do with it." Embellishing a bit, Mr. Fraser tells the head timekeeper, "I don't know how my team is supposed to run at its best if this keeps happening." The head timekeeper responds, "If you'd like, we can delay the first heat and let the second heat run first." Mr. Fraser tells the head timekeeper, "Hold on," and calls Mark over. Mark walks over, along with Eddie and Hoffa. Mr. Fraser asks, "Are you guys okay to run, or do you want to delay your heat?" With his adrenaline levels quite high after his confrontation with Nakla Brocklin, Mark replies, "Let's get this over with." Mark asks the head timekeeper, "Can't you do something about that guy?" The head timekeeper tells Mark, "We've never come across anything like this before. This time, I'm ejecting him from the meet." Mark replies, "Good, because if that guy ever touches me, I'm ejecting him from the planet." After Mark's comment, the head timekeeper whispers to Mr. Fraser, "It will save me the trouble." After the commotion, Mr. Fraser takes the liberty to hang around the finish line. The starter announces, "Okay. Now, let's get back to business." The runners get behind the blocks and the starter announces, "On your marks." Seven runners get ready in the blocks, with Nakla Brocklin again conspicuously missing. The starter announces, "Set." The buzzer sounds, and the runners are out of the blocks. Shortly after leaving the blocks, Eddie, Mark, and Hoffa are head-to-head. At 50 yards into the race, Eddie and Mark take a slight lead. By 100 yards, Mark takes a slight lead over Eddie, making good use of the extra adrenaline he acquired during his run-in with Nakla Brocklin. As they approach the finish, Mark crosses first this year, followed by Eddie, and then Hoffa. Hoffa's finish was good, and it is difficult to tell whether Nakla Brocklin would have placed in this race should he have run. Mark, Eddie, and Hoffa, sweeping the event, exchange high fives. Mr. Fraser exclaims, "You guys were clocking." Looking at his stopwatch, Mr. Fraser exclaims, "That was your best run yet." The times are posted on the electronic scoreboard, but Mr. Fraser still relies on his own mechanical stopwatch. Heading back to the bench, Mr. Fraser tells Eddie and Mark, "One more to go for you guys. One more to go." Dr. Bonomo, Bobby B., and the field events crew return to the team bench, having a good day. Mr. Fraser asks Bobby B., "So, how did you do?" Bobby B. grins, replying, "I won. Mendenhall took second place. Cinquegrana fooled the Attaway and took third place." Mr. Fraser replies, "Cinquegrana fooled the Attaway. The Attaway? What's that all about?" Bobby B. replies, "Yeah. Douglas Attaway. Cinquegrana told him that he didn't make the final, so he didn't show up. We call him the Attaway because he's dumber than the shot put. If Attaway had shown up at the final, Cinquegrana would have likely taken fourth place." Mr. Fraser asks, "Did Attaway actually make the final?" Bobby B. replies, "Yeah." Mr. Fraser laughs and asks, "So, what happened?" Bobby B. explains, "Attaway fouled once, so Cinquegrana told him that there's a new rule. He told Attaway that the average, not the longest throw, determines if you get into the final. So, Attaway didn't show up." Mr. Fraser laughs hysterically, hitting his thigh, and tells Provost Layton, "See? You just can't make this stuff up." Laughing herself, Provost Layton blurts out, "I can't believe that shit worked. Oops. I'm sorry." Mr. Fraser tells Provost Layton, "That's okay. You can be yourself around these guys." The call is made for the final event of the day, the 4x440 relay. With 12 teams and 2 heats, the winner will quickly be decided. The first heat brings the undefeated team of Eddie, Mark, Braden, and Johnson. The first heat also brings Nacla Brocklin's team, which has an alternate running in Nacla Brocklin's place. Mr. Fraser has decided that, for today, they will run in the order that, in the past, has delivered the best performance. Mark will lead off, followed by Johnson, Eddie, and then Braden. Looking around at the opposing teams, Braden exclaims, "It looks like we've already won this race. I've already kicked half their asses once today, and now I have to do it again. I'm gonna get down. Gonna shut them all down and watch them break down." Braden couldn't be more correct. Between the 440-yard dash and the mile medley relay earlier today, Braden has already defeated half the athletes waiting for the heat to begin. The other half have not yet run against Braden today. Hearing Braden rant, one of the athletes asks his teammate, "What's wrong with that guy?" Hearing the comment, Braden points to his critic and exclaims, "There ain't nothing wrong with me. Your problem is you. You're standing there holding a baton, looking at the ground like you've already lost the race. And you already did lose. And when I win, you tell me there's something wrong with me." Braden's critic points out, "You haven't won yet." Braden replies, "Then, let's get this as kicking started." Back at the bench, Provost Layton tells Mr. Fraser, "I can hear Axel Braden all the way over here." Mr. Fraser laughs and replies, "He's telling everyone how our team is going to kick their ass." With the first heat in the blocks and ready to go, the starter hits the buzzer. Mark takes off, delivering on Braden's claim that they are going to win. Mr. Fraser tells Provost Layton, "Watch this race closely. It will be over in 3 minutes. Provost Layton replies, "That would be fast. The last time this 4x440 relay team ran in competition, they ran it in 2:59.82, which was on an all-weather outdoor track." Provost Layton watches as Mark approaches the transition zone. Johnson takes off, and no speed is lost during the transition. Mr. Fraser exclaims, "Did you see that?" Provost Layton replies, "That was a perfect handoff." Looking at one of his stopwatches, Mr. Fraser exclaims, "That was a 45.2 second quarter." As Johnson is running his leg, Mr. Fraser explains to Provost Layton, "Let me explain my thinking in this relay. I had Mark hand off to Johnson because Mark can instantaneously sprint well at the end of his leg and be up to Johnson's speed at the end of 440 yards. Johnson is very strong at the end of the 440 yards. That's why he's handing off to Eddie, who is not only the fastest sprinter on the team, but the fastest out of the blocks. And Braden is the anchor because, once everyone sees him on the track, they'll throw in the towel. He's the best 440 guy around, but I strongly suspect Eddie can beat him. Provost Layton suggests, we'll have to see about that someday. That should be an interesting competition. As they watch the transition from Johnson to Eddie, Provost Layton mentions that handoff went seamlessly as well. Mr. Fraser explains, these guys have been working together since the 7th grade. Continuing their earlier conversation, Provost Layton asks, so, Eddie can beat Braden in the 440. Mr. Fraser replies, he has before. But, then again, I have to wonder what would have happened today if Braden was running in the mile. Provost Layton comments, our university's team is far better than I ever thought. Mr. Fraser replies, yeah, especially now that Paxton is gone. Mr. Fraser and Provost Layton stare at Mr. Fraser's stopwatch as Eddie hands off to Braden. Seeing the composite time, Mr. Fraser exclaims, they might just break their old record. Out to make good on his promise to kick ass, Braden takes off in search of gold. Passing a few trailing runners on his last lap, Braden sprints toward the finish. Crossing the finish line, the electronic timer reads 3 minutes, 2.9 seconds. The undefeated 4x440 relay team has set yet another personal indoor record and another divisional indoor record. Mr. Fraser and Provost Layton exchange a high five as the divisional meet comes to an end. The end of the meet brings the awards ceremony. The meet announcer introduces today's officials and recognizes the coaches and athletes for their participation today. Moving on to the main event, the presentation of the awards begins. Mr. Fraser and Provost Layton are both anxious to hear the overall results of the meet. What is of interest to the two coaches is identifying the stronger events of the other teams. By knowing the other team's strengths and weaknesses, Mr. Fraser and Provost Layton can better assign events for future meets. Mr. Fraser and Provost Layton stand behind the bench, watching as the medalists are called to the stage to receive their awards. With the university sweeping the 40-yard dash, Kathy is called to the stage to receive the gold medal in the women's 40-yard dash. Standing to one side of Kathy is Paula, who takes the silver medal. To the other side of Kathy is Erica, who takes the bronze medal. As Kathy and Paula are heading back to the bench, hearing their names again, they turn around. They take the stage once more and are joined by Tessa. Paula takes the gold medal in the 220-yard dash, Kathy takes the silver, and Tessa takes the bronze. Knowing that Kathy and Paula have medaled in other events, the meet announcer jokingly tells them they might want to take a seat near the stage. In other events, Kathy, Paula, Erica, and Amber take the gold medal in the women's mile medley relay. Kathy, Paula, Erica, and Tessa take the gold medal in the women's 4x220 relay. Once all the women's medals are distributed, it is revealed that the university took more than half the medals. This is a significant accomplishment, considering there were 12 teams competing. In the men's events, Eddie takes the gold medal in the 40-yard dash and is joined by Mark, taking the silver medal, and Hoffer, taking the bronze medal. In the 220-yard dash, Mark takes the gold medal, Eddie takes the silver, and Hoffer takes the bronze. In the mile, Stone takes the gold medal, Mitchell takes the silver, and Akinmola takes the bronze. Braden takes the gold medal in the 440-yard dash, which was to be expected. Bull takes the bronze, and unfortunately Davida took fourth place. And in the 880-yard run, Johnson takes the gold medal, Mitchell takes the silver medal, and Stone takes the bronze medal. In other individual events, the remainder of the university team takes home a good number of medals today. In the men's relay events, Eddie, Davida, Braden, and Johnson take the gold medal in the mile medley relay. The university's 4x220 relay team takes the gold medal, and the 4x110 relay team takes the silver medal. Of no surprise to anyone, the acclaimed 4x440 relay team of Eddie, Mark, Johnson, and Braden remains undefeated, taking home the gold medal. In the biggest kicking of the day, the men's 4x880 relay takes the gold medal. Standing on the stage is Mitchell, Stone, Akinmola, and Johnson, who are very happy to win this event. Provost Layton is personally happy to see that her decision to assign Johnson to this event has paid off. And while the track athletes celebrated their victories, Bobby B. earned the gold medal in the shot put, beating out the silver medalist by more than 15 feet. Ironically, the silver medal in the shot put went to Pete Mendenhall, also from the university. And in the upset of the day, Fabio Cinquegrana takes the bronze medal. As Bobby B. and the university's shot put team walk up to the stage, Provost Layton mentions to Mr. Fraser, "You did it, George." The team took the bulk of the medals. Mr. Fraser replies, "They did it. All I did was tell them that they can do it. But I can see that sweeping the meet at the college level is a little more difficult than it was in high school. We have a lot of work to do before the spring." As Bobby B. and the rest of the shot put team is walking back to the bench, Mr. Fraser tells Provost Layton, "I don't think Monday is going to be easy." Provost Layton asks, "Why? What's up?" Mr. Fraser explains, "Mitchell got beat. He's not going to be happy. Bull wanted the silver medal in the 440-yard dash. Davida was expecting to place in that race, but he's a freshman. In high school, Davida was number 2 in the state. He's not used to losing." Provost Layton asks, "What do you have planned?" Mr. Fraser replies, "We'll have to discuss nutrition, sleep, mental attitude, and that sort of thing. Most of them know how to train. They have no problem in that area." Provost Layton offers, "If you'd like, I can help with that." Accepting Provost Layton's offer, Mr. Fraser replies, "I'd love for you to." After the awards ceremony, the tribe heads to the pizzeria for dinner, with the rest of the team, including their coaches, deciding to join them. Mark takes the liberty to tell McCutcheon that he's not invited, not that anyone would miss him. Everyone manages to hitch a ride with someone, leaving the bus driver driving McCutcheon back to the university alone. After dinner, everyone goes their own way, most probably home for a nap.